across the ASEAN, only on Money FM 89.3.
It was a forgettable day for markets across the Asian region, even here across the ASEAN, with most markets shuddering on the back of renewed concerns about U.S.-China trade relations. And that included markets out in the Philippines, the PSE falling once again by about 0.2% as they seem to shudder around the 8,000 level. What does the year end hold for markets out in Manila? Well, today on Across the ASEAN, to help us get a better assessment of Philippine markets, we're joined by Mr. Brian Ngan, who's the Chief Investment Officer for Cedarside Holdings out in the Philippines. Brian, thank you so much for joining us, and good afternoon to you out there.
Thanks for having me, JP.
All right, so Brian, let's talk about what's been going on with the Philippine markets. As we know, the PSE more or less holding on to a 5.8% year-to-date gain. But as we've seen over the last couple of years, and I'm looking at a five-year chart right now for the PSE, generally whenever they approach 8,000 to 8,200, we see a bit of a pullback for markets, notwithstanding that last rally we saw in 2017. Can you give us your reading as to what it is about 8,000 that's kept the PSE around this proverbial glass ceiling over the last 5 years, which has spanned two administrations, and whether or not there is hope for it to actually break it in the next year or two?
Yep. You're absolutely right, JP. In the Philippines, we know that the growth story is still intact, buoyed primarily by strong consumer spending with two pillars, and that is from the overseas Filipino workers and also from the business process outsourcing industry. We saw the first breakout of 8,000 back in 2013. Seems like an eternity ago. And really what we've seen is a range trade between the 8,000 mark, and we've flirted with the 9,000 mark, as you've said, in 2017. But what we've really been seeing is, in terms of the corporate earnings growth, the five-year CAGR, or compounded annual growth rate, has been at a rate of around 10%. Which is an encouraging figure to me, because it means that back in 2013 to 2014, the PSEI was trading at a multiple of around 22 times, which is expensive relative to the region. But right now, we're trading at 8,000, the same number, but it is just 16 times PE, because the earnings has actually grown by 10% compounded for the last 5 years. So my read is very simple. As we see the Philippines right now, the inflation concerns from, yes, last year have already abated. We've gone from a near 7% headline inflation rate, and right now we're standing at 0.8%. So, you know, that's a 6% or a 600 basis point differential right there. So I think the growth story is definitely intact. One of the drags that we've seen in the recent times is really the budget delays that have been, for the Philippine government, because they had an election earlier this year. And so the budget just got passed in a much delayed state. So we will see government spending on Duterte's flagship bill to kick in. And once it kicks in, I think we can go back and flirt with a 9,000 territory again in the near term.
So I'm glad you brought up those budget constraints, Brian, because we also know that Fitch has revised their outlook, and even the IMF became cheerier on the Philippines' growth prospects. And both of them, Fitch and the IMF, both citing some of these abating budget concerns. Really, was it really all down to budget delays that really hamstrung the Philippine markets for most of this year? And how big the part does this play now in shaping sentiment? Could we even see something similar like this play out in the next election year, say 3 years down the road?
Absolutely, because at the end of the day, I always say valuation of a market is always with the narrative and the numbers. Does the government give the right narrative? In this case, it's build. And number two, do they deliver? And that's the reason why when you look at 2017, it is the first year after Duterte got elected, and he primarily gave a roadmap for the next 6 years. And that's the reason why the sentiment during that time was so strong that we actually traded at 23 times PE at now close to 9,073 at the high. But right now, you know, what we're seeing is a lot of delays. And the fact is that during an election period in the midterms, the budget was actually passed late. And not only that, they halted a lot of the infrastructure rollout during the first 6 months of the year. So to me, the international community reads this as a delay. And again, if you paint a very good narrative, but there's a little bit of delay in your numbers, and remember, the Philippines posted sub 6% growth for the first time in a long time this year. And that's the reason why sentiment has been quite tepid. But my read is very simple. I mean, the other piece that, you know, we haven't mentioned, but I've been reiterating, is inflation. In the past, we thought that runaway inflation of close to 7% last year. But right now, what we're seeing really is that the rice prices have stabilized. And also oil prices have stabilized. And that's the reason why we have a 0.8% inflation rate, which is well within the band of the Banco Central. And so right now, my view is, up to 2022, this is still Duterte's time. And now he has to focus on execution. And when he executes properly, you will see the numbers. And if the narrative and the numbers jive, definitely we see that the IMF's upgrade is warranted.
We're also speaking to Brian Ngan, who's the Chief Investment Officer for Cedarside Holdings out in Manila, to talk about Philippine markets on across the ASEAN. Brian, as we know, the last 2 weeks in the Philippine corporate space has seen quite a lot of change and change in terms of corporate leadership. We saw the unfortunate passings or deaths of the likes of John Gokongwei, the leader of the JG Summit, the conglomerate, and also the heir apparent to the Lucio Tan Group passing away. I mean, these are a lot of changes and deaths in the corporate upper ranks of corporate leadership out in Manila. How are markets taking these changes in leadership out there and the seeming changing dynamics in Philippine corporate leadership? How is this impacting sentiment? Has it really dragged sentiment lower, or how is it shaping where investors are heading in the future?
Yep, my read in this, JP, is very simple. For the top five families in the Philippines, they already have a very good business continuity plan. And this is set not just in the last 2 years, but we're talking about the last 10, 15 years. If you talk about the biggest company in the Philippines, and that's SM. And we had the passing of Mr. Henry C. Tatang earlier this year. But if you look at it, you know, SM has actually gone back to above 1,000 levels just recently. What does that tell you? That really tells you that many of these families have already planned the succession very well, especially the Gokongwei family. And they are of note because the leadership has already transitioned from John Gokongwei to James Gokongwei, the uncle. And then now it's Lance Gokongwei's turn to be in the helm. And if I was there to really attend and listen to the eulogy, and what I heard really is that Lance started from the bottom being a packer back in the Robinson's department store days, all the way up to CEO right now. So it was really a 27-year period from the beginning of his career to right now being chairman and CEO. So I think they've really prepared enough for this. And for the Lucio Tan Group, it is also the same. Succession is there as well. And succession also means there is no key man risk. So we see the passing, unfortunate early passing of Lucio or Bong Tan, the son, but we also have a strong backup there in Vivian, the sister, as well as others which have already been positioned to take the helm. So I think the most important thing to tell investors here is that key man risk is not a big problem in the top echelons of Philippine corporate life. And they've already transitioned this and thought about this way beforehand. So there's really not much to worry about in this front.
Okay, and Brian, just very quickly before we wrap up this interview, another big conglomerate or family conglomerate out in the Philippines moving, Ayala Corporation, as we know, taking a stake in Singaporean-listed Yoma Strategic as they try to push deeper into other markets. They've also said that they're opening to partner with other family conglomerates in the future. Is this in line, really, with Ayala Corp's long-term vision? And can we envision more companies in the Philippines actually branching out from their domestic markets and trying to make more of a big footprint in, say, the ASEAN space or even the global space?
Absolutely. I think this is just, you know, showing to you that the Philippine conglomerates have started not to just to look inward, but also to look outside. And this was really spearheaded by Jollibee, which a lot of Singaporeans are seeing also in Singapore right now. And it's not just Jollibee. There's also ICTSI, which is a port company that focuses on the emerging market ports. And now we see Ayala Corporation partnering with another conglomerate from ASEAN to expand their footprint into a different country. So, you know, what we're really seeing is growth in the Philippines has already, you know, been a 6% compounded annual growth in the last 3-4 years. So these conglomerates, in order for them to get that marginal growth, have to look outside. And, you know, one of the things that tell them to look outside as well is the regulatory structure in the Philippines. And, you know, and one of the things that Ayala and Aboitiz Group, AEV, which is another group that has always been looking out recently, is that the Philippine regulation, when it comes especially to power and renewable energy, needs some work to be done. And that is the reason why Ayala Corporation invested in wind power in Vietnam. Aboitiz Equity Ventures did the same thing and invested in renewable energy in Vietnam. Ayala Corporation invested in Indonesia when it comes to the power side on the drilling of oil. And so what you really see is they're looking outside, primarily also because the regulatory environment in the Philippines still needs a lot of evolution.
All right.
But in my opinion, ASEAN integration is the future, and we are headed there.
Okay, very interesting insights there on the corporate landscape, especially the family conglomerates out in the Philippines. We'll have to leave it to there. But we'd like to thank Brian Ngan, the Chief Investment Officer of Cedarside Holdings in Manila, for joining us today and giving us a closer look at the changing dynamics in the Philippine corporate space and across the ASEAN today. Brian, thank you so much and good afternoon to you, sir.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.
Thank you for your time, sir.